Okay, hello again. I'm on page 78, and in the next couple of minutes I would like to talk about the ventilation system. I'm starting again in the box on the top left. It says here the need for ventilation. And there are three terms that you have to keep apart and that I'm going to simply explain first before we go into details. The three terms are, of course, ventilation. There you see that in the box it's printed in bold. The second term is called gas exchange. And the third term, which is not printed in bold, but that's the first word here in the box, is called cell respiration. And what I want to do right now is I simply want to quickly explain to you, using my own words now, what the different meanings are of these words: cell respiration, gas exchange, and ventilation. Very briefly, ventilation means that we're breathing in and out. Okay, so when I talk about the ventilation system, I'm talking about the lungs. Okay, it's kind of easy to remember this way because a ventilator, you know, it creates wind. Okay, So that's ventilation, okay? The inhaling and exhaling. The question is now, why do we have to do that? Because I'm going to give you now a little experiment. Try the following. Try to open your mouth now. Yeah? Breathe in. And then simply hold your breath. But you keep your mouth open. Okay, so actually there is now, it's open, but you're holding your breath. But now try to hold your breath for a couple of minutes. Even though it's open, your mouth is open and there is air inside your lungs, after a couple of minutes, you'll feel the desire and the need to exhale, breathe out, and inhale again. Why is that? Even though actually when you keep your mouth open, actually there is an air connection. You're not closing it off, you know. But still, you need to get the old air out and the fresh air in, okay? It's a little bit like this, you've experienced this quite often. There is a room, and there were many people in the room, and you have the bell rings and you change the classroom, and then you walk in, the other people walk out, and then you say, "Phew, it's so hot here, and you need to open the window." Yeah, but the door is open, right? The door is open. Yeah, but still, of course, we know that because there is so much hot air in the room with so much carbon dioxide, even if the door is open, all of this bad air is still in the room, obviously. Okay, so what do you have to do? Well, you have to, of course, make sure that there is a wind going through the room to exchange the old air with a new one. And that's kind of the analogy that I'm also using now with the lungs here. Of course, it can be open, but I mean, what's the whole point if there's this old air that's still in your lungs, okay? You have to get it out, okay? So that's why we have a ventilation system. Now, why do we need to get the old air out? The air with the carbon dioxide, that is, it's because there is something else happening inside the lungs, and this is called gas exchange. Basically, when we inhale, you take a deep breath, what happens is that we get air in that contains a high concentration of oxygen, around 20%, okay? The rest, 70% is nitrogen gas, and then some other gases as well. But it's most of 20% in the air is oxygen. That's what we need. So I inhale, and then what happens is the following. This oxygen will then go into the blood, and from the blood, carbon dioxide will go into the air, okay, inside our lungs. And this exchange of carbon dioxide and oxygen is called gas exchange. Okay, so and that one thing that's really important is that this gas exchange happens passively. This means that because there is a concentration gradient, there is more oxygen inside the alveoli, I'm going to talk about this, inside the lungs, than in the blood. That's why the oxygen will automatically move from the alveoli, from the air sacs, from the air spaces, into the blood, and the carbon dioxide will move automatically from the blood into the air spaces, into the air sacs, the alveoli in the lungs. And this happens automatically because of the concentration difference by a process that you probably already know. It's called diffusion. And this basically is called gas exchange. And for gas exchange to take place, you need this difference in concentration. And how do we get this difference in concentration? We get this difference in concentration because we're doing ventilation. We're breathing in and breathing out. Okay. So what is important here is that ventilation, the inhaling, exhaling, okay, the muscles involved, right? So does this require energy? Of course. Breathing in, breathing out is muscle contraction. It requires energy. but the gas exchange itself, the movement of gases, the carbon dioxide to the air spaces and the oxygen from the air into the blood, this is a passive process. Okay, but for that you need the concentration difference in carbon dioxide and in oxygen. Okay, so I talked about gas exchange and ventilation. I'm going to talk in more detail about these topics later more. But now we have cell respiration. That's the first word here. And why did I mention even cell respiration? Is because sometimes there's this confusion where you think, okay, when we talk about the lungs, it's the respiratory system. Okay, but that is a term that we do not use anymore. We use the ventilation system because cell respiration is actually not directly related to this topic here. Cell respiration is a chemical process in which the cells take oxygen, of course, from the blood, from the, which comes then from the lungs, and this oxygen is then used to burn up glucose to get the energy out. It's a chemical process. There's a huge chapter of this on this that we're going to talk about much later next year or so. But right now, I'm just mentioning this here. It is because of the word cell respiration, which is sometimes a little bit confused with the respiratory system. And for those of you who speak German, I just want to also tell you the same problem with the language is also in German. You know how it's called in German? Zellatmung. Zellatmung is cell respiration. When you say Zellatmung, then it's actually a chemical process of burning up sugar. Yeah, so you see that even here the word Atmung is unfortunately used for something different, and that is the reason why they're trying to explain this here in the box separately. Okay, so that is why we need ventilation. We need ventilation to maintain a concentration difference between oxygen and carbon dioxide. Okay, so we move on to the next box. Wow, I actually spent probably more time talking about this than I intended to talk about. The ventilation system, there is a drawing which I would like to ask you please to copy into your nice notebook. And I'm just going to simply talk about this drawing here. And I'm going to do some additions here. First of all, left and right lung. It's only the left lung here is labeled. I think it's kind of clear that left and right always depends of the person, from the person's viewpoint. So the left lung here is drawn on the right side because the left lung is off the person's, on the person's left side. Okay, so we have a left and a right lung. The lung are surrounded by ribs. And those ribs, they look like these little oval circles. And because they're cut open, okay? But of course, it's a three-dimensional thing. Yeah. Next time when you eat spare ribs, if you like stuff like this, then you will think of this here, this topic here. And what do you have between the ribs? You have the intercostal muscles. Do you see that? They're called intercostal muscles. And these are these are your spare ribs. That's the meat that you eat when you eat spare ribs, okay? That's next time when you order some spare ribs, you can say, I'm eating my intercostal muscles here. Or not your own, of course, but those of a pig. So you have between the ribs, you have the intercostal muscles, and they're pretty important. So I'm going to talk about that later on. And beneath the lungs, you have the diaphragm. And the diaphragm is also a muscle. Okay, and we're going to be talking about this later on as well. There are also now inside the lungs, and we start at the very top, is called the trachea. The trachea is also known as the windpipe. Please do not confuse the trachea with the food pipe. They're next to each other, okay? So that's why it's kind of dangerous when you talk while you're eating something or so, then there's the danger that you're getting some food into the trachea, and then you have to cough it out, okay? Or if you get some candy stuck in the trachea, in the top part, then that's, of course, not so nice. There was this one thing that I once, many years ago, it wasn't in the news actually, just to tell you, there was a child, and they actually got who basically inhaled a screw. So basically the guy, the girl, or the guy, I don't know, you know how kids are, they put things into the mouth, and so there was the screw in the mouth, and then all of a sudden the child inhaled very quickly, okay? And then the child got the screw into, not only into the trachea, but actually it went all the way down into the bronchi. Okay, so they did an x-ray, actually seen it in the newspaper, and they had they were kind of worried how we're going to get it out there without having to cut the person open from the outside. So they actually used an endoscope to go through with a camera through the windpipe, and there were some kind of tweezers at the end to actually get it out. So that was actually what at that time they said they've never done something like this before. But they actually had to go all the way from the trachea to the left or the right bronchus, plural bronchi, And then the bronchus, there are two of them, one on the left, on the right. And then the bronchi, they split up and become smaller like branches, and they're called bronchioles. And at the end of the bronchioles, you have the alveoli. So what they are not have not drawn here are the microscopic alveoli that are at the end of the bronchioles. And what is important for you to know is maybe the sequence. So you have the trachea, the bronchus, bronchioles, alveoli. So the sequence is important that you know. There was once a multiple choice question of this. So what is the correct sequence of steps here? Okay, so that is basically the thing. Yeah, so that's why basically be careful when you have candy or so, that you never put candy in your mouth when you're, for example, running and then you're breathing and then you start inhaling the candy. Okay, or if people have a candy in their mouth and they, I don't know, start to laugh and then they inhale quickly and then it goes into the windpipe, into the trachea, and it's not so cool. Okay, so that is basically the drawing. But what I'm gonna do now is I'm going to briefly explain to you now the roles of the intercostal muscles and the diaphragm. These are the muscles that are involved here, and this kind of brings us down to the next box on page 78, the ventilation of the lungs. Okay, right now while you're listening to this, you're breathing in and breathing out, and you are doing now relaxed breathing, and this means that you are breathing right now with the diaphragm, and you notice that the diaphragm kind of bends upwards, okay? The diaphragm bends upwards, and when the diaphragm contracts, because muscles can only contract, what will happen is it contracts and then it moves downwards. And when the diaphragm moves downwards, the volume of the lung becomes larger, okay? Bigger. The inside of your rib cage becomes bigger. And this means that the pressure will drop inside the lungs, the air pressure will drop inside the lungs, and the air pressure outside is higher than inside the lungs, then, and the air will move into the lungs. Air will always move from an area of high pressure to an area of low pressure. Very easy to remember. You have a plastic bottle, and you press it together, right? And then you open the bottle. So inside you have a higher pressure than on the outside. How is the air gonna move when you open the bottle? Of course, outwards. Okay, so from an area of high pressure to an area of low pressure, and the pressure of the lungs you can change by changing the volume. So when you squeeze a bottle, what do you make? You make the volume of the bottle smaller, and the air pressure goes up. Okay, that would be the exhaling, yeah? And then the air moves out. And when you're inhaling, you're making the pressure inside the bottle or inside your lungs, you're making the volume larger, and then the pressure drops, and then also the air will move into the lungs, okay? And this is what the diaphragm does when you're doing relaxed breathing. So right now, while you're listening to this, you will actually notice that your shoulders and your rib cage actually is not really moving. The only thing that's moving when you're breathing is your belly, right? And that is because you're breathing with your diaphragm right now. Approximately half a liter of air you're breathing in and out right now per breath, okay? Half a liter approximately, okay? So that is the thing. So the diaphragm contracts, it moves downwards, volume goes up, air goes in, and when you breathe out, it simply relaxes. So the diaphragm only relaxes, it does not push the air out. It simply goes up back to the top when it relaxes. Okay, so the diaphragm is used for relaxed breathing. Now, what about the intercostal muscles? And the intercostal muscles are used for forced breathing. Okay, so for example, when you need to blow up a balloon, okay, then you need to force the air out. And when you do that, you need the intercostal muscles. Or when you force breathe the air in, okay, then you also need the intercostal muscles. So you're using the intercostal muscles, then you're breathing with your ribs. So try the following. Breathe in, okay, and as much as you can, and then you will actually see that your shoulders will move up and your ribs will expand and rib cage will expand, and then you're using intercostal muscles, okay? And there are now two types of intercostal muscles. Those that for forced breathing out, for forced exhaling. Okay, I'm breathing out now, and for forced inhaling, okay? And you need two types, because muscles can only contract. And it's easy to remember, for inhaling, you need the external intercostal muscles. Okay, what they do is when you want to force inhale, then you kind of, it's pulling the ribs apart. Okay, so you have external intercostal muscles contract when you inhale, and the internal intercostal muscles contract when you exhale. So it's exactly the inhaling and exhaling, and external and internal is exactly switched around. Okay, the whole box here on page 78 actually summarizes that, what I already explained to you. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you simply a short, much shorter summary here, because inhaling and exhaling is actually kind of the opposite here. So what you do is, for example, you can write it in one line. For inhaling, then doppelpunkt colon, okay, external intercostal muscles contract, the diaphragm contracts, so it moves downwards, okay, the volume of the lung, so arrow, the volume of the lung goes up, arrow, the air pressure in the lung drops, arrow, air moves into the lungs. So basically I've summarized the whole left column here. Exhaling, the internal intercostal muscles contract, the diaphragm has to relax, okay, it cannot, it simply relaxes. Therefore, the volume inside the lungs, becomes smaller. This is also assisted by abdominal muscles. Abdominal muscles are belly muscles, okay? They kind of push your intestine together, okay? When they contract, this kind of assists in breathing as well. The volume in the lung will go down. The air pressure will go up. Air will move out of the lungs. I've basically summarized the whole box here right now. Ventilation of the lungs, okay? So this is, there is another term here. It's called antagonistic muscles. In literature class, you know of the protagonist and the antagonist. The protagonist is the main character, and the antagonist is the enemy, so to say. They're working against the main character. And antagonistic muscles mean that the muscles are working against each other. For example, the external and the internal intercostal muscles are antagonists. And you also have, for example, in the muscles in your arm, they also work against each other, okay? Because they can only contract, and they cannot push. Muscles can't push, So we move on. Monitoring ventilation in humans is actually a part of an experiment. I'm just going to simply define some terms here. The ventilation rate is basically how often do you inhale and exhale per minute. So your ventilation rate, I mean, if you want, you can measure this. Once inhaling, exhaling, that's one ventilation. Okay, I don't know, 40 times per minute, I don't know, 60 times per minute, So that's how often you inhale, exhale per minute. The tidal volume is the volume of air that you inhale and exhale. Okay, so right now your tidal volume is smaller. I mentioned around half a liter maybe, okay? But when you do forced inhaling and exhaling, okay, then of course the tidal volume is larger. So when you are doing sports, for example, then of course the tidal volume is going to be larger. And at the same time, your ventilation rate is going to be higher because you're going to breathe in and out faster. So when you're doing a lot of exercise and when you need more oxygen, both the tidal volume and the ventilation rate will go up. Okay, and the next 2 points are simply about an experiment, how you can measure this. There is something like an inflatable chest belt that you can use, or pressure sensors. I'm not going to talk about this so much. I'm going to talk more about the diagram here. Here it says here, the volume milliliters per kilogram. What do you mean per kilogram? The volume, so basically this means per kilogram of body mass. So what you can do is you can determine a little bit by your mass, how heavy you are, how much volume of air you actually inhale and exhale. And then you see that this person here, then all of a sudden took a deep, deep breath. Okay, and then exhaled everything again. That's why there's such the peak, okay? So that is, how do you measure the ventilation rate? The formula on the very bottom, the number of ventilations over time. Isn't this, that's kind of obvious, okay? So theoretically, what you can do is you can calculate this. I've not done this before. One inhaling and exhaling is one ventilation. So how many peaks do we have? One, two, three, four, five. Let's say six peaks, five peaks. five peaks in about 20 seconds or so, and then you have five divided by 20, but then you have it per second, so you have actually 20, you have to go up to 60, so five times three is 15 inhalings and exhalings per minute. 15, uh-huh, okay, something like this. So that completes page 78. Okay, write it into the nice notebook. So let's move on then. In the next MP3, I'm going to move on to page 79, where I'm going to specifically talk about gas exchange.